906. Good morning. I'm Jenna Barr. Welcome to the Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable. Our number is 850-437-1620. Would love to hear from you this morning. 9 to 10 a.m. every Tuesday is the Garden Line with Mike Wiggins. So get your questions, your calls in ASAP. You can even text us a picture to that number, 437-1620. Happy Tuesday, Mike.
Well, happy Tuesday to you. It is so good to have you back in town.
Thank you.
It really is.
It's great to be in lower elevation.
I should say so. Anyway, I hope you had a successful, fun trip, but it is good to have you back.
Thank you.
Because you missed some cold weather here.
Oh, I did not. Trust me.
Damp weather.
They got me plenty cold in California.
I'm telling you right now. I'm surprised you didn't get caught in the floods.
I'm very lucky. Lots of rain, and there were road closures. But I thought of you much during my Saturday outings. I went with my brother and his girlfriend, who have a huge love for plants and botany,
really?
Growing things, cultivating and propagating. And so we went to the botanical gardens.
Really?
Oh, my word. I mean, it's interact. You get to touch everything. They had sandpaper plants, of course, redwoods. They had, good Lord, every kind of succulent that ever existed from anywhere. All sorts of pines and rhododendrons and philodendrons, you name it. But I thought of you the whole time. I tried to take as many pictures as possible. And then I realized, I don't even know if I can fit it all on my camera. It was amazing. They had camellias.
They really?
Look, that's our tree.
I would think they would do well there. I really would.
They were beautiful.
Yeah.
And it was really cool to show off some of my knowledge from the Garden Line.
You laid it on them. Good for you. Good for you.
There was one plant I wanted to ask you about just while we're on the subject. It was really cool. It was the flowers and blooms were very similar to almost a flowery floral bottle brush tree. And it grew in a bush that was called the Hebe Autumn Glory. The weird part was we couldn't figure out why, most of the things had, most of the growth had brown spots all over it. And I imagine it's probably from the amount of moisture there, because we get that too in rainy seasons here. But it was weird. Some completely covered, while others were left unscathed.
Now, the brown spots were not part of the plant. It was a little... look at that.
Isn't that cool? Yeah. I'm telling you, it was very, very interesting. Tons of ferns. I mean, you name it. Elephant ears out the wazoo. It was cool to see, because they bring different plants from all over the world to the San Francisco Botanical Gardens.
It almost looks magnolia-like.
They had tons of magnolias.
But I'll tell you what, the brown spots you're talking about, Jenna, we've talked about that at length on the Garden Line.
Is that where you use the oil to get rid of it?
Well, not these. This is a fungus spot. Remember, any discoloration like that on the internal part of the leaf, I say the internal, not on the edge of the leaf, is generally a fungus of some sorts. And this one has two, it's a two color. Got light brown in the middle of the spot and then dark brown.
Right.
This is probably not scientifically correct, but some people will call that a frog eye.
Oh, well, that makes sense. It does look like it.
Exactly. But that's a fungus spot, which is could be caused by the humidity there. Was this in the botanical garden just growing outside, or was this in a greenhouse?
Oh, it was outside. Outside. And then they even propagate and then sell plants there. It was very, I know.
Okay, that is so cool.
I was trying to see if I could, smuggle one back in my backpack or check one on, but I really didn't want to mess with California too much. You never know.
I think you would have never gotten out of San Francisco. You'd have been stopped at the airport.
But I will tell you, it's good to be home, and I know that you guys experienced cold as well just a little under a month after...
After the big freeze.
Extreme cold.
After the big freeze. It was I was a little scared of it in that I think the forecast was about 35, 36. I said, if they've missed that by 5 or 6 degrees, here we go again. But it just felt so cold. And But that's, I think that's just January in Pensacola. But I'll tell you what, the as I go around town and talking to people, it's amazing the number of people that have had damage from the big freeze.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, it really kind of surprised me, the number of people that approach me, good friends of mine, who have citrus, and saying, what do I do? They say, my citrus tree, it looks kind of, like, for lack of a better word, kind of eerie, almost Halloween-like, because it's bunch of dead branches with these fruit hanging on there. And it's just really, well, I think the best word for it is sad. It's just very sad that that has happened. I do remember a trip I took down to South Florida. I guess it was in the 80s after that big freeze. And just to see all the citrus groves had trees that looked like the ones we have in Pensacola right now. They were all dead, and it was just horrible for that whole industry, which, if memory serves me correctly, a lot of that industry moved south.
Further south. Mm-hmm.
But now, with climate change, it's kind of moving back north. They're kind of following the warming of the climate. So, in any event, it is very, very sad. I do think, and we've talked about this, we talked at length on the Garden Line. I don't want to repeat myself, but... people come to me and say, Mike, my citrus tree looks dead. What do I do? What do I do right now? And of course, it's one word answer.
Pray.
No, it's a two word answer. It's a two word answer. One, pray. Two, do nothing other than pray.
Okay. It's a two part question here.
But really, that's what you can do is do nothing, because you just don't know what's alive and what's dead. And as I have said before on the Garden Line here, the experts are telling us wait till late spring, wait till summer. We may not know until then.
You said May or June is when we might see actual damage. And that's for every single person who wants to control those things, it is very difficult, or has invested a lot in your gardens and in your lawns. I can imagine.
That is correct.
The frustration.
But however, a lot of the tropicals, hibiscus and mandevilla, crotons, for example, if they were exposed to that cold, I don't think there's much hope. I really don't. The hibiscus you may see some come back once you prune it back in the late spring, but it's going to come back very slow and probably very weak. I would almost recommend, of course, I'm not spending my money, I'm spending everybody else's money. It's just, as we've said on the show here, Jenna, let's just kind of renew it, start all over, and go again, and just chalk it up to them. That's just the way it's going to happen. Every now and then, we're going to have those type of weather events that are going to cause us some problems in our lawn and garden. I do think, I don't think the lawns have been affected. I hope not. We'll know that when they come out of dormancy. Some of our ornamentals, I went up to Pace to see a grower that I know up there. He's not a grower. He's a wholesale plant distributor, but he buys from big nurseries and then distributes it. His Japanese yew, of all plants, his Japanese yew got zapped. Now, that's up in Pace. It got a little cooler there than, say, it did in the city, and, of course, than it did in Gulf Breeze and those locales. But his Japanese, I looked at them, they just were just brown. Not total, but about half of it was just brown. And what we have to watch out for on plants like Japanese yew and some of your other ornamentals that you say, oh, nothing happened to these, is watch out for that split bark. If you have split bark at the very base of the plant, and sometimes it's even hard to tell if you do, that damage may not show up till summer, even late summer. Mm. And you'll say, why is that plant deteriorating? Well, it got split bark back when it went down to, below 19 degrees. That's what happened. So for the most part, do nothing. I'm doing a little bit of cleanup. Things like agapanthus, I'm cutting mine back right now. I'm going to come back to kind of about almost over 8 to 10 inches off the ground, and I think they'll come back. Same with the elephant ears. Go ahead. I'd cut those back. No sense sitting there looking at those dead leaves. And so there's some things like that, those herbaceous plants, those soft tissue plants. you can go ahead and cut back. But your woody plants, your ornamentals, nah. No, just cool it on that one.
All right, just cool it. Calm down. Hey, it's 9:16. You're listening to The Garden Line on News Radio 92.3. This is the Pensacola Expert Panel, and we'd love to hear from you. 850-437-1620. Got a couple questions here. Promise to get to those in our text line. Feel free to also call. Again, 437-1620. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, will our Boston ferns survive?
Ooh. On my best day, I'm a child of God. On my worst day, I'm a child of God. Oh, every day is a good day. You're the reason why I'm so blessed. I'm so blessed. Got this heartbeat in my chest. No, it doesn't matter about the rest. If I got you, Lord, I'm so blessed.
Sing it again. 9:19, we are so blessed that even though we had that freeze, I will say we've got sunshine and almost 70s.
That's right.
On the way, and rain.
And the rain is good.
But not bad rain.
Good rain.
Yes.
Good rain. Absolutely.
We are so blessed to live in Northwest Florida. And to have you as our friend. Good morning to you. I'm Jenna Barr here with Mike Wiggins on The Garden Line. So if you'd like to ask those questions, please squeeze them in this morning, 437-1620. My Boston ferns are now leafless. Oof.
That's, yes.
Man. So what do? We need to wait those out as well?
Yes. Now, I assume Boston ferns are in a hanging basket or a pot or something. Number one, I'd go ahead and cut them back. I would go ahead and cut them back. But obviously, keep in mind, you know, we're only in the middle of January. Remember, we've talked about that January back in the 80s. It went to 5 degrees. That was in January 21st. So we're not out of the woods and with cold weather yet by any stretch of the imagination. But on the ferns, I would certainly cut them back and then be sure to move them somewhere where they can be protected from a freeze if we should have some more freezes, which I bet we will this year. I think the Boston ferns are in real jeopardy. I don't have any question about it. I don't know if cutting them back and protecting them is going to work. I'd be quite frank with you, I tend to doubt it. There's one fern that I really like, and I planted one in a container. It's called a spring-arrive fern. It's very spring-arrive fern. It's a great fern, and it generally puts up with cold weather. It even freezes. Mine looks like you dropped an atom bomb on it. I don't think it's going to make it. So if the spring-arrive fern didn't make it, I'm afraid your Boston ferns could be in real jeopardy. So, just go ahead, you know, kind of cut them back and then protect them and then, you know, put them out, you know, in a nice semi-shady situation, you know, when springtime comes and wait it out. But I have my doubts, to be quite frank with you.
Okay. Hey, here's another one for you. It's 9:22 on the Garden Line. During the recent cold snap, the big freeze, my oleanders took a hit on the beach. The leaves froze and are falling off. However, there is still green on the branches. They look bad, but when should I trim them back? Thanks.
On the oleanders, that's a woody plant, so I would wait. But I think they're probably going to be okay. Those oleanders, a lot of them at the beach, have been through this before. And they generally will come back. So I think I would wait and start pruning them back. Oh, I'm going to say maybe May, maybe late April, but probably May. And I think you're going to be okay. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a lot of the woody plants that we are concerned about, just like this oleander, you know, get your fingernail or a little knife and scratch that limb.
Okay.
And kind of work from the top down and kind of scratch it. And if it's green, and it sounds like the oleander has got some green on it, I think you're going to be okay, unless we get zapped again. But for now, if we have normal conditions working the rest of our way through the spring, I think we'll be okay.
Okay, excellent. That's it for right now. If you have a question, go ahead and squeeze that in, 850-437-1620. We have a ton more to talk about this morning with Mike, but we are always welcoming your questions, your concerns, and your discussions here on The Garden Line on News Radio 92.3. Oh, hey, you guys are fast. Some of my amaryllis leaves have turned brown and died, and some remained green. Are the brown and dead leafed bulbs dead too?
I doubt it. I think they probably will be okay. I would, you know, you could prune some of those, you know, dead leaves off, obviously leave the green ones, And I think you'll probably be okay with those. I'm hoping so. They are so pretty. And so many people have planted those. And obviously it gives you some color that is just unbelievable in Pensacola in the spring. So I certainly would not give up on them. A lot of those things, go back to the agapanthus I was talking about earlier, Lily of the Nile. They operate off bulbs, if you will. That's where an amaryllis is, off that big bulb. And generally, if it's like that, you can cut back that top foliage and they will come back. However, there's a big however to this. It's been a long, long time since we've experienced the cold that we did in the teens. So even though we follow all these rules and we cut them back at the right time and all of that, there's just no guarantee if they're going to come back at all. And I still think some of it depends on where you live. If you live in Molino, I think you're going to have more trouble than if you live at the beach. You live in Gulf Breeze. I think, obviously, it was cooler there. It was colder there. So on the amaryllis, I am really, really thinking it's going to be okay. Some of that could be just wishing and hoping, but I think they will. Let's hope so.
Okay, let's hope so. Fingers and toes crossed for you there, my friend, and keep us updated on that. We love getting updates from you. I've got more questions coming in, but we have to take another break here. It's 925 on News Radio 92.3. Promise to get to those questions or your pictures if you do text all of them in. Please feel free. We also have, it looks like, a couple phone calls with questions, so go ahead and get those in as soon as possible. When we come back, we have a short break in the newsroom, and then we'll continue on with the Garden Line. Don't you worry about a thing. Mike Wiggins is here for you. He's got his cape on and he's ready.
We're not worried about anything here. We just are glad to be here.
Exactly.
No doubt about that.
But we had a friend call in.
Yeah, we had a friend call in. We warned about her pinces.
Yes.
Great looking plant. You know, little red blossoms on it. What to do about it? I am scared for that plant if it was out and exposed to that cold weather. I think that is one plant you could cut back. And then obviously protect, kind of like we talked a few minutes ago. But I really have my doubts whether it's going to survive. It might. It puts up with a lot of bad. It'll put up with hot weather and sunny weather. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
With extreme cold, I think it's, let's call it a toss-up. What do you think?
Yeah.
But I wouldn't give up on it. I would cut it back and let's see what happens. But I do have some doubts. What we do ask, when we get a text like that, is come May, if you remember, call us back. Text us back and say, Mike, my Pinta survived. Or Mike, my Boston Fern survived. Or Mike, it didn't. You know, I just want to know. Because we are really in a little bit of unknown territory on some of these plants. And it's going to be very interesting to see what happens as we move forward.
Excellent. And thank you for calling in. You can always do that. Call in, ask your question. You can leave it with Tina or we'll get to you in our break. So don't ever hesitate as well. So what do we have to look forward to after our news break?
Well, we got a lot to talk about, but I did want to say one thing. You know our friend Skip Vogelsang, who comes and brings the camellias?
Love.
He is now, I don't want to say consumed, but very interested in the amaryllis we talked about a minute ago and has all these different varieties of amaryllis. He said he'd drop in for a little 15-minute chat with us one day on the Garden Line in the spring and talk about the different varieties and how to take care of your amaryllis. So I look forward to that. He is really good at his horticulture, and we'll see Skip in the spring.
Absolutely. We love Skip. In fact, I showed off y'all's picture with all the camellias to my brother. They were so impressed with all the different ones we have here in Northwest Florida. That's something to be impressed about. Let's no remember doubt. That with Northwest Florida.
Absolutely.
Hey, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Happy talk, keep talking, happy talk.
talk about things you'd like to do. You gotta have a dream. If you don't have a dream, how you gonna have a dream come true? Talk about a
9:36. Welcome back. I'm Jenna Barr. You're listening to the Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable. 850-437-1620 if you'd like to call or text in this morning. I'm here for you on the phone line. So, Mike,
yes.
Continue.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I did want to mention one thing. I'm kind of jumping into spring here, but I got an email from Jack. Jack, who owns Caladiums Florida, down, and I've always recommended those. He said, Mike, there may be some shortages. You might get your order in. So I went online to see what he was up to and see what he had. And it was really interesting. Jenna, they had pictures of how they grow these caladiums. I mean, you and I will plant a dozen of them, right?
Right,
and enjoy
right.
them. They had acre upon acre upon acre of caladiums. It was an unbelievable little video. And what they said in the video that I found very interesting, down there, it's in Lake Placid, which, of course, is in southern Florida. They every November, they mow them down to the ground. Then they get a potato, but I think you call it a potato digger, and they dig them up and they sell them, but they mow them to the ground.
That's how they sell them?
That's how they sell them. It's interesting. But the one other thing I wanted to mention, because I have enjoyed it this year, and if anybody who's listening is going to contact those folks or somebody else who sells things, and if you're going to buy elephant ears to replace the ones that you think are not going to come back, I believe mine will, and I think they all will if we just go ahead and cut those back right now. But there are two types. I think this must be Latin. Colocasia and alocasia. Well, colocasia is what you call a regular elephant ear. It's kind of not quite as tall and kind of leans over a little bit. It's the alocasia, Olocasia odora, which Jack calls his giant upright elephant ear. And that's what I grew last year.
Yes.
And I got to tell you,
they're amazing.
They were 8 feet tall, huge leaves, kind of standing upright. And it just gave this corner of my yard just this nice little tropical look. And other than cold weather, they're bulletproof. They like a lot of water, but otherwise, they're bulletproof. Now, obviously, the cold weather just knocked them down to the ground. All the leaves are just laying on the ground. So I cut it back. Oh, my goodness, maybe 2 to 3 feet. And believe it or not, I think I mentioned this to you last week, Jenna. There was some new growth on it.
Oh, excellent.
New growth, just a little
That's
bit.
That's hope right there.
So there's hope, and it's going to come back. So in any event, if you're thinking about ordering online caladiums or elephant ears, that's all they sell in Lake Placid, Caladiums, Florida, you might want to consider that giant upright elephant ear versus the regular one. I find it much more attractive and satisfactory.
Okay, excellent. Very interesting. Hey, 850-437-1620. I've just got a couple of good mornings here. Good morning to you. But if you have a question, please feel free to text it in. Again, that number is 437-1620.
Very good.
All right.
Okay, here we go. Also, if you're ordering some online plants, it would be the time to order your roses. I've always said what you need is to buy them from a reputable rose grower like Jackson and Perkins or Weeks or someone like that. But buy number one grade. That's the only kind that you want to grow in Pensacola. You don't want to put some number two or number one and a half, which are little spindly little stalks, if you will. And so buy number one for sure. And buy one that is recommended. I wrote down the name of just a couple of the roses for 2023 from Jackson and Perkins. I'm going to hit it real quick. Blushing Lavender, which is a grandiflora, which is a tall growing, large bloom rose. Mandarin Sunset, which is orange. That's a Floribunda, shorter rose with little blossoms on it. Peppermint Party, which is a climbing rose. It's got red and white blossoms on it. Michelangelo, which is a tea rose. That's your regular long stem rose, Michelangelo. And so those are just a few. I did note one here. They name it after famous people, and this is a test, Jenna. This is a test. You ready?
Okay.
Who is Princess Charlene DeMonico? That's the new rose for 2023 from Jackson and Perkins.
Oh, really?
I did not know who she was. Do you know who she is?
Princess
Charlene DeMonico.
Wait, DeMonico? But is Monaco France? Was she a French princess?
No, yes, along the Mediterranean. It's Monaco.
Oh,
Monaco. Yeah, she's married to Prince Albert, who is the Prince of Monaco. But this is, I mentioned that because they name these roses after famous people.
I'm trying to Google
them. And I did not know who she was.
I'm trying to Google these roses as we go, right? And I wanted to take a look at all the pictures while you're sharing them. So I Googled the one, I'm caught on this. I'm sorry, I'm very distracted. Mandarin Sunset.
It's an orange floribunda.
Okay, that's beautiful. Also a type of weed strain.
Really?
For marijuana.
No, you made that up.
I'm not joking.
You're making that up.
Because your rose did not pop up first. Allbud.com did.
No wonder that company is doing
so. I'm so thrown off back here. I'm like, what is he talking about? He is sharing some fun times over here on the garden line.
Mandarin Sunset. I am like, I always wonder about who thinks up these names. I guess they borrowed that name.
They did. I think they have things called the Scooby-Doo, too. So we just don't know what to expect with our friends.
There are three other most popular names over the years. I wrote this down, too. Disneyland, which is a floribunda.
Okay.
Probably the classic rose for Pensacola. So many people have grown over the years. It's Mr. Lincoln. And then there's Pope John Paul II, which is a tea rose. So anyway, point being, if you're going to order roses, Jackson and Perkins would be a good place. And I'd go ahead and get them because we would need to buy them, get them delivered, get them in the ground. We like to do that in February, or even early March, but February would be best.
Yes.
And go from there.
I'm sure we're going to get a ton of questions over the next, what's today, the 17th. So we're a little under a month away from Valentine's Day. I'm sure we're going to get a ton of questions.
About the roses. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But one thing I always recommend, and once again, we've chatted about this here before, is if you look through the catalogs, you see these gorgeous roses. A lot of people are tempted to say, I want one of those. I want to get a dozen of them and start being a rose grower.
Okay.
Don't do it. Oh. Get you maybe one floribunda, one tea rose, maybe a couple of tea roses and a grandiflora. And just get 4 to 5 roses, period, because your regular roses, other than your knockout roses, that's a whole different deal. These traditional roses can be a high maintenance. Fertilize once a month. You got to spray them for black spot, spray them for mildew. It's a lot of work, and you've got to have the right spot. You've got to plant them correctly. Full sun, mandatory to have full sun. And so the point is that don't overdo it because roses nowadays are not inexpensive. So get a handful of them and try to be a rose grower if you want to, but be aware that it does take some time. Much more maintenance than a knockout rose, which so many of us have planted, which is basically bulletproof.
Okay, excellent. Excellent information. Hey, we are just shy of 9:45 here on the Garden Line on News Radio 92.3. I'm Jenna Barr here with Mike Wiggins here to answer your questions. Mike, that is. So if you'd like to text him in, 437-1620. When we come back, our friend Catherine has some information for you about the Camellia Club.
Oh, great.
How sweet it is to be loved by you.
Come on, come on,
baby. Oh, yes, dear baby. How sweet it is to be loved by you.
Come on, Jack. Come on, baby.
I needed to shelter someone's arm, and there you were. I needed someone to understand my plan.
Welcome back to the Garden Line. It's 9:47 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Jenna Barr. Welcome to the Pensacola Expert Panel. Feel free to text or call in with your pictures or questions. Before we get to more of our discussion with Mike, our friend Catherine, good morning, Catherine, and thank you for texting in, said that tonight something's happening with the Camellia Club. They will be having a grafting demo at the Garden Center. It's happening tonight at 6:30 p.m.
That's very interesting. Grafting is a real part of that camellia growing hobby, in that camellias are grafted on a different rootstock, and they're just very precise ways to do that. And I'm glad they're having that. It's, you need to, you know, take a lesson from some of these experts. And we go back to Skip. Skip, I think, he does that. He teaches that.
Oh, okay.
Grafting. Keep in mind that camellias are grafted. And, of course, as we all know, our citrus trees are also grafted. And one thing, going back to the citrus, as far as the grafting is concerned, if it's below the graft, you start getting this growth coming out of your citrus tree, just snip it off because it's worthless. That's just that stuff. That is the citrus coming out of the rootstock, which doesn't produce anything that you would want. And okay. The good stuff is grafted on top, of course. And so, but grafting is a major part of the development of new camellias, and it's just really a great hobby. It's very very extensive insofar as the knowledge that the Camellia Club has here, and they're more than willing to share. Even if you're saying, I don't have time to do any grafting, you need to go and just listen to what these folks are saying, because they'll teach you so much about camellias. And Catherine, I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's interesting, though. Yeah. What a great opportunity.
Right.
To be able to do something. I'm sure I'm going to look for information for the Garden Center so I can throw that on our podcast. So while you're chatting, I'll go ahead and do that. But feel free to text in other information, or you can text in a question, or you can call in with a question. There's still plenty of time left. We have about 9 minutes, okay?
Very good. I did want to mention a couple of things. And these were things that, kind of looking ahead, we need to do in the near future. And I think weed killer is a very important one, because those of us who do, you know, worry about our residential horticulture realize, with all these plants that have died, many of our weeds did not. They're still there. So, and many of them are in our turf. So you may be tempted to get your, what we call, post-emergence weed killer. That's the one that kills the weeds that are looking at you, and go out and spray it. Well, you don't want to do that. You don't want to spray that post-emergence weed killer on your dormant grass. It's just not the best thing. What you want to do is, very shortly, what, about 30 days, is to put the pre-emergence on. You can spray it. You can put it out granular-wise, which will help inhibit the weeds from coming back in the summer, in the spring and the summer. So that's what most people do, just kind of by clockwork. And middle of February can be weather that's cold and nasty and whatever. But, you know, find a day when it's not raining. And I prefer the liquids myself. The granular are easier, and they work pretty well too. But you get that pre-emergence on there middle of February. Now, what you don't want to do, boy, how many times have we preached this sermon? Jenna, don't say, okay, I'm going to get my pre-emergence on there in the middle of February, but I'm going to make it real easy, and I'm going to put it on with a weed and feed, because it's got the pre-emergence in it, and it's got the fertilizer. Well, that is not good whatsoever with the grass and the ground being cool. Right. What will happen is you'll put the weed and feed on there, and you'll end up with yellowing grass. It may not kill it, but it's yellowing grass, and the fertilizer just won't do much good. I would do pre-emergence weed killer middle of February, and then your fertilizer, your 1608, 1648, one of those, which one of those fertilizers work for St. Augustine, Centipede, and Zoysia, and do that probably in April, and that's when you put your fertilizer. That's when it's going to do the most good. So that's what you need to do. I did want to mention one thing, and we don't have time today to kind of get into which grass to choose while you're doing your re-landscaping. But one thing about centipede, and you can even pay attention to that this time of year, be careful with traffic on centipede that is dormant. I know over the years I take my garbage can out, I take it through a gate, and there was some centipede grass there, and I would walk over it. You put traffic on dormant centipede, and many times it just won't come back as it should in the spring. So just be aware of that. You may want to change your route coming in and out of your backyard if you have to cross the centipede, because that can be a problem. So be real careful about that. Also, going one more step ahead on the weed killer, as you get into April and May, then you can come back with that post-emergence weed killer. Your grass is out of dormancy, and then you can spray for the weeds that have escaped the pre-emergence weed killer. So that's sort of the process to control weeds. Key to turf weed control, though, of course, is a healthy lawn. Proper watering, mowing high, remember 4 inches for St. Augustine, 3 for centipede, 2.5 for zoysia. Proper mowing is critical. A lot of folks I have seen in the last month or so have really scalped their yard, taken it down. And I understand, you know, we've mowed the lawn all summer, and let's mow it one more time and be done with it for a while. But that is probably one of the worst things you can do is to mow it really close. So keep that lawnmower, for St. Augustine, for example, keep it set on 4 inches. That is really, really important. And one other thing about St. Augustine, I would certainly encourage a soil test.
Yes.
Because you don't know if you need lime or not. And because here in Pensacola, we have an acid soil. That's why camellias do so good. That's why azaleas do so good. That's why you have Bellingraph Gardens in Mobile, because we have this acid soil, and these acid-loving plants do so well. Centipede is an acid-loving turf. St. Augustine, not so much. Mm-hmm. It likes a higher pH. So you need to kind of sweeten the soil. That's not a very scientific term, but it works. With lime, about 40 pounds per 1,000 square feet generally, but you may not need it. You may not need it, and spend a couple of bucks on a soil test will certainly tell you exactly what you need. Our good friends at Werner's have got a soil kit that gives an extensive report on what your lawn needs. So if you're in that neighborhood, you may stop by and take a look at that. So that's exactly what I would do, is check the soil, check for lime, and don't forget the rule. If you get to lime and it says, oh, I need lime, don't say, well, I'm going to do everything at once. I'm going to fertilize and put my lime on the same day. You need at least 2 weeks between liming and fertilizing, because they, to keep it simple, kind of tie each other up. So
okay.
That's what you do.
Excellent. Hey, I do see we have a call coming through. We won't have time to take any other calls, I don't believe, this morning. We will try to squeeze in a call and a question before we wrap up, but I want to make sure that we stay on time this morning. It's 9:56. Let's take a quick break before we come back and wrap up here on The Garden.
Get up off of that thing and dance to do you better. Get up off of that thing and dance to do. Sing it now.
All right, we are wrapping up. I apologize if we didn't get to your call or text this morning. Try again next week, 9 to 10 a.m. here on News Radio 92.3 for The Garden Line. If you missed any of this episode, you can check out the podcast online, newsradio923.com, and our new mobile app, or listen to the Encore episode Saturday morning here on News Radio 92.3. So, Mike, any last thoughts before we wrap up?
Yeah, just a quick thought. So many of us are cleaning up after the freeze, putting things by the street so they can be picked up by the city or the county. If you live in the city, put it on your lawn and not in the street, because that inhibits the street cleaners. Plus, it's just not good for the stormwater. That stuff washes into the stormwater drains, and we know that's not good. So put it in your yard right next to the curb, and you'll, you know, be helping with the stormwater problem. And the city will pick it up and do no damage. They're very good at that.
Excellent. Hey, we'll talk to you next week on The Garden Line.
Thank y'all.